Hey guys, it's Red. This episode of the 300s podcast was recorded live at Oak Square Liquors in Brighton, but I may have forgot to hit record at the start. So without further ado, we now join our program already in progress. Welcome back to another episode of the 300s podcast. My name is Red, and as always, I'll be your host. And today, we're joined by Big Z, Mattis, and Joey B. Boys, it's good to have you all in here again, once again. How you doing? And you're like a real adult buying furniture, man. I gotta say, before we get too far into it, I appreciate and I respect all the 300s apparel I'm seeing on the podcast right now. We got Mattis repping the 300s hoodie. We got Joey B repping the brand new 300s crew neck sweatshirt. Love it. And then I also have the new Patriots Champions t-shirt. Buy that shit. All right, so we have a lot we got to talk about today, and obviously Celtics been on a hot run recently. We got the Red Sox coming up, and Bruins been on a run. We got some suspensions to talk about. There's a whole lot to get into, but the first things first, I got to talk about the Celtics. They've risen like a phoenix from the ashes on the West Coast. They, after losing five of six, including one to the freaking Bulls, which we all watched, and then a complete embarrassment of a no-show against the Rockets, they kind of looked like they were in a free fall. And then all that coupled with the most drama we've seen around this team all year long. Then they head out west. They win three in a row, including blowouts of Golden State and the Lakers. So, I don't know. Do you think there was like a coming to Jesus moment on that flight out west? Or did someone really just blast Gordon Hayward in the face to give him that black eye? Mattis, what do you think? And I think there is something to be said of the media, especially media in Boston, making too big of a deal out of something that's not as big of a deal to the team themselves. But the way that team was playing, I don't want to sound like a little league coach, but it really looked like just like a complete lack of effort. The Houston game was just tough to watch. They got their doors blown off from the second they tipped the ball off. And it just, even for when Kyrie was walking into the arena, he's, you know, saying, I can't wait to be done with all this shit. It's like, dude, you're playing one of the best teams in the league going head-to-head with one of the best players in the league, MVP frontrunner, and it's on national TV. It was Sunday, I think Sunday night, ESPN or ABC, one of those channels, and he just, I think he had like 9 points in that game, and it just was a complete no-show. And then this is kind of what I want to talk about too, is just what is up with Kyrie, where, Joe, like you said, he maybe doesn't care. He's just kind of busting balls. But if you want to be the leader of the team, I think you kind of got to be a little bit bigger than that sometimes, or at the very least not saying these things and then having the media make stories out of it and then being all pissed off about it and bitching about all that. It's like you created half of these negative storylines just through your own action. So I feel like you got to kind of pick one way or the other. Right. Right. Yeah, and toxic is a word not just getting thrown around by the media. I mean, you heard Marcus Smart say it, you heard Jaylen Brown say it. Like, literally, these guys are talking about how the locker room is toxic, and that's never a good thing. And I feel like, I want to say it was Adam Jones made the point, or he was reacting to an article someone had written, but Kyrie, he wants to be, you know, the smartest guy in the room. He's always kind of going on these long, elaborate speeches, and these monologues he gives, and then, you know, you look at Jaylen Brown, who I guess fancies himself as a really intelligent guy. He actually just goes named as one of the VPs of the Players Association at 22 years old. So I mean, that's probably a little bit of two quote unquote smart guys just butting heads. Like, no, I'm the intellectual on this team. So I feel like Jaylen Brown kind of got sandbagged by the veterans in general on this team for a long time. I mean, you even saw Marcus Smart yelling at him when he didn't pass an open pass to Marcus Smart when he's in the corner for an open three. It's like, Marcus, you're like a 20% three-point shooter. Just because we're not going to give you the three ball, you don't have to freak out on the guy in public. Yeah. Yeah, plus Golden State has three all-time players in their starting lineup, and then guys on the bench like Jonas Jerebko, who I love, don't get me wrong, but Jonas Jerebko is not exactly challenging for a starting role, and he fucking knows that, so there's not really any problems to go around there. I think there's something to be said for too many cooks in the kitchen, and a lot of these guys want to be starters, and I think some of them, probably namely Jaylen Brown, has been humbled early in the season, even though he's playing really well recently. Terry Rozier, he has fallen way back to earth, and he's a different player when he starts, definitely, so I'll be interested to see him go start somewhere else and probably succeed, but yeah, he's not exactly the player he was in the playoffs last year, so not enough drip for him right now. Yeah, there's nothing I hated more than LeBron's playoff mode activated bullshit. It's like, I understand, it's a long season. You're not going to be going balls to the wall like, you know, you're Trot Nixon for 82 games a night. But to just basically come out and admit, yeah, I'm trying now. It's insulting to the fans, really. Yeah, and they were talking about this on the Ringer the other day. LeBron, you know, he still is playing well statistically. Like, he had 30 points last night, so he's still playing well. But that bullshit that he creates, the drama in the locker room, it's not always going to fly, especially when that team is primarily all young guys with a coach in his second year as a head coach, compared to in Cleveland, where he had a lot of veterans, a lot of his buddies who were probably a little bit either more willing or more able to kind of deal with that kind of drama. Because this team was okay. I mean, they were still in the playoff hunt, and then when they just openly campaigned to get AD on that squad, that the entire team, it's like, you're trying to trade my ass. So it's kind of similar to what was happening here, where it's like, either I'm not gonna be here or you're not gonna be here, so I'm not gonna try and get along with you. Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's a good. I mean, it's the. Well, it's the beginning of. No, it's the beginning of the end for the way that they've done business with LeBron in this league for years, because it used to just be he was so good that we're promised a playoff spot and we're almost guaranteed a spot in the finals, so we'll just kind of deal with this shit. We'll let him basically be the GM and pick his players, and we'll figure it out. We'll get there. And now it's really the first year, and whether it's because he's gone to the West or it's because he's dealing with injuries or whatever it is, you know, they're looking like they're not going to make the playoffs. So I think this team's a lot worse than they had probably hoped for. No one really thought this team was going to be a title contender. But I think going in, Magic Johnson would even admit it, year one with this Lakers experiment was going to be probably just waiting it out until you get either Kawhi Leonard or you get Anthony Davis or someone to come save them. I mean, LeBron and Kyle Kuzma aren't winning a title together. Yeah, and they were talking a lot about that on the broadcast on the Celtics Lakers game, where I forget who they were quoting, but they were just talking about how players are more concerned with their, you know, their likes and their retweets and basically building their brand rather than just winning. And It might have been. I forget exactly who they were quoting who said it, but it's true because even LeBron, it's like he knows he's never going to catch Jordan. I mean, he's lost way too many times. So I think there's been a shift in his demeanor where he's not trying to chase Jordan and get as many titles as possible. But I think that's also because he knows he can't. So he's shifting towards more of, being a single great player. Like he even said the other day that passing Jordan in terms of career points was up there with winning a title, which I think is laughable. And I think it's just becoming very apparent now that he didn't go to the Lakers to win. He went there to make Space Jam 2 and build a LeBron empire and have Clutch officially take over the NBA. And I just don't think it's been a very thinly veiled attempt at that. He's just trying to grow the LeBron brand. Okay, right. Old school guy. Great train wreck. That's embarrassing. Or Malone. Yeah, and I think that's something that's becoming, more and more apparent with these players. And I'm never going to fault a guy for trying to build his brand and kind of build up a career for after basketball. But when you're on a team that is the Boston Celtics, it's like you're one of the most historic franchises. You have a great chance of winning a title. Stop fucking around. And something with Kyrie that just kind of bothered me is he's miserable a few weeks ago, telling the media, "I don't owe you shit," when they're asking about free agency. Then even just a week ago, he's talking about how, "I'm not gonna miss any of this shit when I'm done playing." And then the other night, after they beat the Lakers, this was really weird. I tweeted this out. I took a video of it because it just kind of jumped out at me. And they're asking Kyrie, what's different? You guys are on a 3-game winning streak. What's changed? And what did he say? He said, I quote, "I did some coaching on the plane. I helped Brad. I helped Coach Stevens with some coaching, but more or less just getting our spirit right." And he's kind of like half serious, half joking. And I think it might just be his high level of deadpan humor, but I can't even tell this guy anymore. And it's like, what are we trying to accomplish here? I mean, just throwing the coach under the bus. He's been around LeBron too much. I still want him to stay. I just want him to either, be an asshole and wear it or shut up. Because to say these things. Yeah. No, I mean, it's everyone from Boston's known for being, I guess, serious dickhead, where, we like to have a good time, but these Hollywood types that are making these jokes, laughing around, like, "All right, we'll go make our movies." Like, dude, do you want to play some basketball or not? Let's fucking go. Yeah. All right, let's shift gears a little bit. We are in March now. I mean, you can't really tell because it was snowing today. So, spring, fuck spring, I guess. But Red Sox inching closer to opening day. And I just realized it's going to be the same weekend we're in Vegas. So I can fulfill my lifelong dream of betting on a Mariners game in March. So I'm pretty excited about that. With that being said, what are we going to bet on? What are some of the best sporting events to bet on? I know we'll be out there during March Madness. Do you prefer just betting 10 football games every Sunday? I mean, I remember at a friend's bachelor party, there were guys betting soccer games in like Kazakhstan on their cell phones. And then we go to the bar and they're betting on ball strike calls. So, I mean, that's some true degenerate shit. Yeah. Yes. A little bit. Yeah, no, betting on baseball is just kind of acknowledging I'm probably not going to win this, but I need to kill 3 hours. I mean, I'm just going to walk in there with a hundo and spread it across 5 games. I mean, you might as well. I don't know. They don't have anything like in the arena yet, do they, for betting? You still have to do it at the sports book next door. Yeah. All right. So, getting back to the Red Sox for a minute, one of the things I wanted to talk about that I think is going to be an absolute disaster, because we've seen it be an absolute disaster with this very team, is the concept of closer by committee. So obviously we have not re-signed Craig Kimbrel, and I cried no tears over that because despite the numbers, he is an absolute high wire act, so I wasn't looking to give him $100 million like he wanted. But with that being said, I'd like one guy to have the job, and they have yet to commit to anyone, and the season starts in about 2 weeks. So I mean, just looking at some of the candidates, they had Matt Barnes, who's got 2 career saves. They have Ryan Brazier, who had a great year last year, 10 career saves, but track record is pretty much non-existent because he's been playing in Japan half his career. Brandon Workman, remember him? He has 0 career saves. So there is no one I feel confident about. I mean, someone might jump out. I think they even joked about Stephen Wright potentially closing, but we'll get to that in a little bit. He's in the booth. Yeah, and with that being said, I think Brazier would be the choice. I kind of agree with that too. He throws gas, and he's definitely got a little bit of a tude, which I like to see from the closer. Matt Barnes has been hot or cold. The guy's either lights out or he can't find the fucking plate. I mean, I was listening to the game on the radio yesterday, and he couldn't hit anything. He literally bounced one like 5 feet in front of the plate. So that's not exactly who I want closing the game. And Workman I've liked, but he's been injured so often. I don't know if he's still got the gas he needs to get out there, but there's not really a whole lot of options. I'm having nightmares with this closer by committee. I'm having bad dreams remembering BK Kim and Chad Fox. So that's the last thing I want to see out of this team. Yeah, I think Dombrowski has been enabled by his success last year. It's just like he had nothing going in the bullpen. He had a bunch of, he had no one to bridge to Kimbrel essentially. And then luckily, Joe Kelly caught fire. Ryan Brazier came out of nowhere to catch lightning in a bottle. And then you had Eovaldi just pitching absolutely lights out as that swingman slash closer, whatever you want to call him. And then half those guys leave. And then Dombrowski basically just doubles down and says, "Yeah, we won the World Series last year with this strategy, so don't worry about it." Ugh. I can't believe they brought Carson Smith back, because again, he was another guy they traded for who just was injured the entire time. And then when he did come back, he blew his arm out by chucking his glove off the bench. And then he insinuated he was injured because he got overworked. And Alex, that pissed off Alex Cora. And they asked him, like, are you saying your manager overpitched you? And he gave some answer to the effect of, you heard what I said. And I remember tweeting out when he said that, I'm like, he'll never pitch to the Red Sox again. And I don't think he pitched the rest of last year. So I'm shocked they brought him back, because he sounds like a big asshole. I mean, the Red Sox medical staff has definitely been one that's been under question in years past. I think they kicked everyone out a few years ago after Jacoby Ellsbury with his mysterious rib injury that lasted 2 years, and they had all kinds of stuff like that. So they're not beyond reproach, but you said it with the they're not the Mets, but you said it with the suspension. Steven Wright, he was another dark horse candidate to be a closer despite being a fucking knuckleballer. And he just got popped for an 80-game suspension for testing positive for HGH. And it's actually his second straight season starting the year with a suspension, so that's great. So I don't know what to think about that, but if you thought that body was all natural, you're kidding yourself, man. Yeah, and I liked Steven Wright because he was a knuckleballer, came out of nowhere, had great success, and then, obviously last year he had his domestic abuse alleged, so that's not good, and now he's getting popped for steroids, which I don't know what he's doing. I know we've been HGH defenders in the past with guys like Rodney Harrison, so it's definitely more of a recovery, quicken your recovery from injury type of PED, but that doesn't help. I mean, this guy hasn't been a solid pitcher in how many years now? That's right. Yeah, and Wakefield is a great example, because he would be lights out for a couple months at a time, and he actually has closing experience. I mean, 1 year he saved, I don't know, like 20 games or 30 games. Like, he was pretty good. But, oh my God, just sitting here thinking about a knuckleballer coming in to the ninth inning, up one, and, bottom of the ninth in Fenway in June against the Yankees. It's giving me heart palpitations. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, this is well, that's a good point. Yeah, because are we gonna bring back Mirabelli? Like, if he's gonna be closing, like, Kimbrel couldn't find the plate in the playoffs last year, and that was already stressful enough. So let's go with the guy who's gonna have more problems for a catcher. I don't know. Yeah, he's definitely a great depth piece, and Sox are running out of that, especially with pitchers who have had injuries like David Price and Chris Sale. So this will be something interesting to watch. And they also don't really have much depth at the minor league levels. I mean, their top guy up is usually Hector Velazquez, who is okay, but there's no young pitching prospect down there that's ready to come up. I'll take that nice signing bonus. Thank you. Now, another piece I want to talk about on the Red Sox real quick before we move on is we blogged about this a couple weeks ago, and the WEEI broadcast booth, they needed a new play-by-play guy or color guy, and they couldn't decide on one new Red Sox broadcaster, so they hired eight. So this is going to be a rotation and a half. Let's see. We got old fan favorite, and Rick, I'll let you get into this in a minute, but Sean McDonough, he's coming back to his Boston roots to call some Red Sox games. Josh Lewin, Mario Impeba, and one of those guys, I want to say it was Impeba, was the guy that got into a fist fight with his broadcast partner in the booth, so that's fun. That'll be interesting to watch. And then we also have, I don't watch it, no. Yeah, so there's definitely no lack for drama, and I wonder if the Red Sox said, hey, we're not getting enough back page ink. Maybe a guy who's going to throw a right hook in Castiglione. Okay, I mean, that could be interesting. So that's only half of the group, and we also have some familiar faces like Marloni, Dale Arnold, Tom Caron filling in. Dave O'Brien's going to do a couple games on radio. And then the dark horse candidate to do a few games with the Red Sox is Chris Berman, who literally, I haven't heard from him forever. I thought he was done. You know, obviously, he worked at ESPN for years and years and years and years, and he has one of the most painful fucking home run calls of all time. So that's going to be really interesting. I don't know how many backs he can get out with Mookie hitting a piss missile over the Fenway. Well, so that's something where I know we talked about it on a recent podcast where there was a big stink about it because there was a report that they were going to make it quote unquote a talk show, which I think was just kind of misinterpreted of what they were trying to do. Because I think what they're trying to do is make it a little bit more conversational, which they should, because they have not done it yet. I was driving yesterday and I was listening to the game on the radio, and Castiglione was interviewing, I think it was the athletic director for Florida Gulf Coast, because that's where Chris Sale went. So he's interviewing this guy, and he's talking, and he literally interrupts him to say, "And that's a ball on the left, and he's outside, 3-1. Like, just let the guy talk. I don't care if it's a ball. Like, unless the guy hits a home run, like, just let it go. You don't need to call every single little aspect of the game. I mean, I understand you're trying to paint a picture, but come on, let's have something a little bit more entertaining and less choppy if you're going to bring someone in. Yeah, like, that was never what they were going to do. People, just use your brains. Right. I say just give Johnny Gomes a job and be done with it. Joe, if someone hook slides you, you're just going to stand there and take that? Or you're going to do something? You're going to be a man about it. 3-1. I will not tolerate. I will not tolerate any Johnny Gomes slander on this podcast. I will shut it down real quick. All right. All right. With that being said, we got one more topic before we wrap it up. And I know we want to talk about the Patriots a little bit. Their offseason, the free agency. Obviously, the biggest move that happened just the other day was Michael Bennett coming in. And what does this mean for the team? I'm obviously the guy. I love the trade. Bennett's been a stud pass rusher for years. And he's getting up there in age, but I mean, the Pats only need him for a year or two. The only thing is, I think we all agree, this is the end for Trey Flowers in New England, right? Yeah. Yeah, so Bennett, I know he's got some pending legal troubles. He's a very outspoken player, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that goes here. But I think it should be expected he's probably going to be more quiet than not. I mean, that's usually how it works here. If they're not there, they're gone, unless they're putting up wild numbers. Even then, you don't really hear much from a lot of players. So Bennett. Yeah, so, and that's that another point. Well, yeah, that's why it's going to be fun to watch, because another point is he's been on the record in multiple interviews just shitting all over his new defensive coordinator because he was his coach in Tampa Bay, and he's been out just saying the guy's a stiff, he's not a good coach. He, you know, is basically just like a lapdog for Belichick when they had those joint practices a few years ago. So that's going to be fun going to work. And, oh, hey, what's up, coach? Remember me? It's so weird because I wrote a blog about it where I went through all the defensive coordinators of the Bill Belichick era in New England, and every single one of them came from within, like whether it was Mangini or Dean Pease or Matt Patricia or Brian Flores last year, they all had multiple years in the Patriots system. And the only guys that came from outside the system were guys that he had worked with for multiple years under him already, like Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel. So there's never been a situation like that where he just brought in a guy off the streets that he kind of knows to be his defensive coordinator. So that was very uncharacteristic of Belichick. Yeah. It's a good point. I mean, if you like Shiano, you let the hand of God touch him and cleanse him of all sins, give him that pardon, and bring him back on. But I also think, Joe, to your point, the Rutgers connection is key. I mean, he's been chasing Rutgers players for years, and now he gets this, the white whale of Rutgers. Bring him on. Yeah, and Bobby Valentine was a clown though. Like Shiano, I think he's gonna be fine, especially as a defensive coordinator. I think the problem with him was he just was a bit of a pill to work with, and he didn't really know how to be a head coach. I think he's gonna know his X's and O's. Well, yeah, and then also, but also one thing I want to. One thing I just want to add, though, is that this is as uncharacteristic as this is, Shiano is pretty much of the same mindset and philosophy defensively as Belichick. So it's not like he's bringing in someone wildly different to try and, shoehorn in a different defense. I love Marty B. I'm a little concerned with him potentially just being washed. I mean, the guy's been out of football for over a year now. He left football with a bad injury because he couldn't come back from that. And now he's, you know, doing his own thing. He's got his own like animation company. He's writing kids' books and all that. And it seems great. I feel like he wants to come back solely to play with his brother. And I don't know if that's necessarily a great motivator. I mean, I know he was great when he was here, but he also has a long history of not necessarily, you know, being the most motivated player on the team. Yeah. All right, we're gonna spin this off. We're gonna spin this off into a legal podcast on a future date. But one more thing I wanted to touch on with the Patriots is there going to be a potential Danny Amendola reunion? So this is something that I blogged a couple weeks ago, and it kind of came out of nowhere because I mean the guy was signed to a 2-year contract. He was set to make $6 million this year, so it shouldn't really be a huge surprise. But that's talk about immediate buyer's remorse for Miami. It's not like they could have thought he was going to come in and catch 200 passes and make the Dolphins a playoff team with Ryan Tannehill throwing him the ball. But you know he had the 1 year there. He had a pretty good year. I think he had like 59 catches or something, so he was pretty good. But he's out Miami now as they do a little bit of a soft reboot, as we like to say. Do we think he's going to be coming back to the Patriots? Because they could definitely use a receiver. They could definitely use him. I would love him as a fourth receiver, but I honestly think he might have burned this bridge with Bill. I don't know if he's going to be able to come back, especially not on low dollars. That's exactly why he left in the first place, was because he needed to make some money. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so I mean, this is what it kind of is going to come back to, obviously, how much he wants to make. Because if it's going to be small dollars, great. If he wants big money, then no way. And I had the stats somewhere. I don't have it in front of me right now, but Amendola, like you said, he didn't put up huge regular season numbers. He was great in the playoffs, but his catch rate was top three, I think, in the league. It was amazing. The guy did not drop passes, so that's why he was such a reliable player, especially in the playoffs. Brady knew if he got on the ball, he was going to catch the freaking ball. Yeah. Plus his girlfriend's from around here, so another incentive for you. I would definitely bring him back. I mean, as a third or fourth receiver, especially as a team right now that has Edelman and a bunch of Jags, I mean, I'll take him, no problem. Yeah, we're gonna have the oldest wide receiver core in the league, it seems like, if we're up at this rate. Yeah, not exactly. I mean, that's the thing though. They can't draft receivers, so what the hell else are they gonna do? Yeah, they'll go bargain shopping. They'll pick up someone off the scrap heap who doesn't get signed in the first couple of weeks of free agency, and they'll try and shoehorn him in. I mean, I hope it's not Eric Decker again, where I was excited about it because I like Decker, but he was clearly washed. He couldn't pick up the offense. He couldn't even catch the ball, and he promptly retired. Right. All right, guys, is there anything else we want to touch on before we wrap it up? I know we covered a lot, so any closing thoughts, guys? Speak. All right. Yeah, we'll do the 300 places of bet in Las Vegas. Ooh. Yes. I will tweet at John Taffer tonight. All right. There you go. There you go. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us. That's going to do it for us here in another episode of the 300s Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, or even Spotify. Do us a favor. Leave a review. Let everyone know how much you love all of us. All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Ha ha ha.